Hello there, this is Calvin, and you're listening to KUCI at 88.9 FM in Irvine. You've accessed the Do You Do Show, and we bring you bits of knowledge and information you might not have heard from people you might not know. One thing I must let you know, though, is that this program has views and opinions that are expressed that do not necessarily reflect those of KUCI, its management, or the UC Board of Regents. To find out more about this show and others, please log on to KUCI.org. You know, guys, I am really, really excited today because Professor Jonathan Feng is back. And you guys have never heard him if you're listening via the internet because we were down on that particular day, and so we weren't able to broadcast via the internet. So the only way you would have heard him would be on the radio. But now you can hear him on the radio and on the internet. So I'm really, really excited because this man has a lot to say. The title of our show today is What Don't We Know? I'm sure we know a lot of stuff, but there's a lot of things that we don't know, and there's a man here that knows a lot of stuff that's going to inform us of some of the things that we don't know. Professor Feng, thank you so much for coming out.
My pleasure to be here.
Okay. You know, the last show, I didn't get a chance to talk much, or you didn't get a chance to talk much about it, but one of your passions is your family. And we don't even know if you're married, how many children you have. I don't think so. Let's talk about that for a little bit.
Well, yeah, they're some of the most important parts of my life for sure.
Okay.
So I'm married. My wife is Sue Wong. She's actually at UCI also, a professor in chemical engineering and material science department.
Oh my goodness. Okay.
And a wonderful person. And then we have two kids. Mm-hmm. Two boys, Daniel and Matthew, who are 10 and 5.
Okay. I know that you have some spiritual affiliation. Daniel and Matthew, is that a coincidence that they're biblical names?
Or? It's not a coincidence.
Okay.
They are one from the Old Testament, one from the New Testament.
Oh, yeah, right. Right.
Actually, it follows a tradition also. My name, of course, Jonathan is
right. Right,
my brother
right.
was named Timothy.
Oh so, man!
There's a little family history there.
Yeah. Wow, that's something. That's really something. Listen, your passion extends beyond family into research. Mm-hmm. Tell me a little bit about your research and what you've done thus far in terms of, because I know there's some type of affiliation with the Nobel Prize, but I'm going to let you talk about that.
Yeah, well, so my research is in physics and astronomy.
Okay.
So I'm a professor there in the Department of Physics and Astronomy, and my particular specialty is to try to figure out basically what the world is made out of, mm-hmm. what particles, and also sort of where the universe came from, where is it going.
Right.
And this is a field that's had a lot of interesting progress recently, mm-hmm. but the big thing is what you mentioned, which is this Nobel Prize just last a couple months ago
right.
for the Higgs particle discovery, which was a huge event in my field mm-hmm. because it was a particle that was predicted to exist about 50 years ago, and
okay.
we've been looking for it ever since in many, okay. many different ways.
Yeah.
And finally, it was discovered in this particle collider in Geneva, Switzerland, mm-hmm. just a few years ago.
Okay.
So that was a big deal for us.
Right. Absolutely. So what is it able to do?
Well, this particle was postulated to exist because it was required to give particles mass.
Oh.
So if you didn't have this particle... So we have this model of the world called mm-hmm. the standard model, mm-hmm. and it's much more than a model. It's been tested in thousands of ways,
okay.
very, very stringently tested. Fantastic model, except if it didn't have a Higgs boson, all the particles would be basically massless. And that means that they would be going at the speed of light, because the only thing that slows things down is when they have mass, when they have inertia.
I got you.
And for pretty obvious experimental fact, we're not all moving around at the speed of light. No. So
yes,
there's something
sure.
wrong with that, right?
Okay.
And so this particle basically, There's a lot of ways to describe it, but one is that it sort of provides a sort of cosmic molasses that slows particles down. And we knew it had certain properties, just so that it would fit in the model and do this job of making particles slow down and have mass.
My goodness.
And the only thing we didn't know about it was how heavy it was. And so we started back, you know, even in the 60s, 70s, 80s, looking for it, and we found that it didn't have this mass. I mean, it didn't have... It wasn't existing with this mass range, and we looked for heavier particles, and it didn't have that mass, and we kept looking and looking. And it turned out you needed an enormous collider to make them. You needed something that's, you know, this collider that goes under the countryside in France and Switzerland, in Geneva, to take two protons, smash them together at extremely high speeds, and produce enough energy so that you could actually make this very heavy particle. And so this particle has a mass that's about sort of 120 times the mass of a proton. And it's got all the properties that were supposed to be, that were predicted for this particle. And so we're pretty sure we've actually got it this time.
Okay, okay. Now you say two protons. Protons are smaller than atoms.
Yeah, that's right. They're the fundamental particles in the center of the atom, in the nucleus of the atom. So these are extremely small particles.
And, but they have enough force. When you bring them together at that speed, the force is enough to make something?
Yeah, that's right.
Man.
So basically, if you speed them up to very high velocities, then they have a lot of energy. And basically, going back to Einstein's famous equation of E equals mc squared, once you've got a lot of energy, you can convert that into a lot of mass. E equals mc squared.
Right.
And so what you need to do is get them going so fast that you've got enough energy to make massive, very heavy particles.
Tell me this. How? Where do these particles come from? Where does this mass come from? Out of the clear blue sky? What? How does that happen?
Well, so this mass that, that sort of the mass that creates proton mass, some little bit of it comes actually from this Higgs boson.
Okay.
And then some of it actually comes from the binding energy of other particles that make the proton. So as you say, the proton is really small, but it's actually not the smallest thing we know. And it's actually made out of smaller things,
which are goodness.
Called quarks. And this is a known fact. I mean, you don't learn about this when you're, you know, learning chemistry in high school.
No, I never heard of this stuff you're talking about,
but this
right?
This is a well-established fact that each proton is actually made out of three quarks. And those quarks are all bound together with forces, and that binding energy contributes to the mass of the proton.
Right.
So that's how we understand it.
It sounds like within the proton itself, stuff is moving.
Yeah, that's right.
And that's energy. I mean, the force itself is energy.
It provides energy. And then there's actually also these actual particles, these quarks that have mass themselves and they're moving around. So it's actually a proton is a very active piece of matter. It's not just sitting there inert. It's actually maybe one way I think about it is sort of a bag. Containing these three quarks, which are sort of like marbles.
Okay.
They're moving around in the bag. But it's a very active system of particles.
My goodness. So I know just a little bit now, because I've heard of a neutron as well. So what is the neutron doing
in the course of... Yeah, so the neutron is very much like the proton. It's made out of three quarks also.
Okay.
But the quarks are slightly different. And so the quarks have funny names. The ones that are in these proton neutrons are called up quarks and down quarks.
So the up quark, how do you spell that?
Just normal old up.
I mean quark.
Q-U-A-R-K.
Q-U-A-R-K.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. And the up ones are in the proton and the down ones are in the neutron?
It's a little more complicated. The proton has two ups and a down.
Okay.
The neutron has two downs and an up. So there's that little flip of one up to a down.
Okay. Is there any magnetism involved? Well, because both of these are revolving around the atom, right? Or they're inside the atom,
they're both
revolving. Okay.
Yeah. And so they have these quarks have charge, so they respond to electric forces and magnetic forces, Yeah, so they're...
Man, that's amazing.
Yeah, it's a...
Yeah, amazing. And so all matter that we know is made of a whole lot of... what are they?
Quarks.
Quarks.
Yeah, quarks.
Okay. And so inside of us, stuff is moving like crazy as well.
Yeah, that's right.
Hmm.
Yeah, and so we got quarks to make up the protons and neutrons.
Mm-hmm.
And then we've, of course, got these electrons.
Oh, right, I forgot about the electrons.
Yeah, but that, basically those things make up all the matter we know of, you know, all the elements in the periodic table, pretty much all normal matter.
Okay, right. Let me get this straight. Mm-hmm. An atom is made up of neutrons, protons, and electrons?
Mm-hmm.
Is that the way that goes?
That's right, yep.
Man, so, and you can't even see an atom. So,
yeah,
so
smart.
Seeing a quark or whatever it is, is it possible to see them though?
You can see them in the sense that you can do experiments that show that they're there.
I got you.
But
I got
they don't
you.
Sort of they have very weird properties. They don't exist in isolation, so you can't actually pull one out and kind of look at it, even if you could see that small. They always come together with pairs and triples of them.
So when you collide them, you can't really see what you're doing, but because of the knowledge that you have, you know that they well, you're evidently going to know they collided.
Right.
But you know, the equipment that you have can show you that they are moving toward each other and that kind of thing.
Exactly. And actually, when we talked about making these Higgs bosons, what's really going on is you're taking two protons, smashing them into each other, but it's more like you're taking two bags of quarks and throwing them at each other. And what's actually colliding to make the Higgs boson is two quarks.
So
the fundamental thing is two quarks smash into each other, high velocity, make all this energy, it turns into the mass of the Higgs boson.
Mm-hmm. Can they be two ups, or does it need to be a up and a down?
It's got to be, usually it's a up and a down, or an up and a anti-quark.
Oh my goodness!
Yeah,
now we got another one. So this anti thing, because I've also heard of antimatter. What does that mean exactly? Antimatter, anti-quark.
Antimatter is just matter that has all the opposite properties of normal matter.
I got you.
And so, if, for example, an electron has a charge that's usually -1, an anti-electron, which is called a positron, as the charge is +1.
Okay.
And every particle we know about has an antiparticle. So it's up quarks have anti-up quarks, down quarks have anti-down quarks.
Okay.
And they have, everything's opposite, basically.
So that's always, though, good and evil, you know, that kind of thing. So everything has an opposite.
Yeah.
Tell me this. Quantum physics and physics... what's the relationship?
Well, quantum physics is usually meant to talk about, refer to physics at very small scales.
Oh, I got you.
So, like the particles we're talking about, the subatomic scales, they behave according to the rules of quantum physics.
Okay.
And this quantum physics, quantum mechanics leads to all these very weird things. There's uncertainties and probabilities. You can't predict if, you know, something could happen or could not happen, and you can't actually predict what's going to happen. All you can say is, well, there's a half a chance of this and half a chance of that. And so quantum physics brings in all sorts of very weird things, but it is the way that the subatomic world is works, governs that. When you talk about sort of big things like people, like, you know, you and me, we don't have to think about quantum mechanics. But that's just because we're composed of so many of these little things. We can use sort of what's called classical physics. But quantum mechanics is the way the world works down at the sort of distances and masses that I deal with usually in the particle physics world.
Okay. So when give me a name of one of your classes.
Like last quarter I taught a class on general relativity.
Okay.
And I also taught one on thermal physics.
Okay. What I'd like to do is for you to give us like 2 minutes of class and make your choice, either one of those classes. What does that sound like when you're teaching? What are you you know, the first day of class, what happens?
Yeah, okay. Well, general relativity is a fascinating topic.
Okay.
This is what I tell students. I tell them, this is your chance to meet Einstein mind to mind. I mean, not face to face, but mind to mind, because this was his great crowning achievement.
Exactly.
And, of course, we've all heard about Einstein. Mm-hmm. He's sort of the quintessential genius and things. But really, why? You know, what is it that he did that was so amazing? And in that class, we actually figured out what was his great crowning achievement. Why is he so revered among scientists? And what we're going to find out is that a lot of the things you take for granted aren't actually true.
Really?
So, for example, we're going to find out that when I say two things happen at the same time, you might not agree, and we might both be right.
Whether how
two
is that?
Things happen at the same time actually depends on like how fast you're moving.
Okay.
And so this is one of the amazing facts of relativity that Einstein developed, which is that the concept of simultaneity is actually not absolute. So that's one. The fact that time moves at different rates for different people. This is something, you know, sort of psychologically we think, you know, oftentimes, you know, well, if I'm having a good time, time goes really fast. As soon as
exactly.
I'm stuck with some boring chore, time
right.
goes slow. Okay.
Right.
So there's that effect, but that's a different effect.
Okay.
There's actually a hard scientific effect, which is to do with if you take a clock, like, you know, I take two clocks that are identical. I stick one up in the space shuttle or something, and it goes whizzing around the Earth, and I bring them back together, they aren't actually going to read the same time because one slows down when it's going faster.
What?
So, yeah, so there's all sorts of stuff. And so this was, you know, you asked me to say what I would say.
Right.
These are the things that I tell the students, and we're going to put all this on solid mathematical basis and foundation and work through this. I mean, it's going to take us, you know, a whole quarter to develop this sort of stuff.
I would imagine.
But you'll see it just comes right out of, you know, combining basic logic and mathematics and some basic experimental facts that we've established.
So, I'm going to have to get my wife to, you know, some kind of way get me in here so I can, I can take that class. That sounds really interesting,
absolutely,
man.
You should. We have, we have people auditing that class. It's mind-blowing.
Man,
some of the most interesting stuff.
Man, that's amazing. So, not. I would say definitely, but time can stand still for a couple of nanoseconds or whatever the case might be. I mean, not stand still, but slow down.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's amazing. Yeah. That's amazing. And but I'm sure there's a whole lot of components to that as to why that happens. But just the fact that it happens is simply amazing. And that's just one thing that you talked about. That's something.
Yeah.
That is really, really something. Relativity. So things are relative.
Uh-huh.
Amazing.
Yeah.
It's I mean you talk about emotions, you know, like one person feels that he, you know, a rubber band broke, you know, and another person, he broke a glass. And their response to it is relative, right? And depending on where they are. So everything is. That's something, man. That's something.
Yeah.
I'm serious about that. I'd like to get into that to find out some more stuff because I'm really, really fascinated by science. And as I told you before, and I want the people listening to know, when I say scientist, I'm looking at a guy that's stuck in a room and just doing a whole lot of studying and figuring and analyzing and all that kind of stuff. And they have no compassion, no feelings for people, none of that, you know, until I met you and I began to understand that, wait a minute, they're human first, and then they become scientists.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
Whoever they are as human being, they are also as scientists. They just do different things than people who aren't scientists, but it's all relative, right?
Yeah. I think what you say is absolutely true. You know, there is a component of science is very hard and very emotionless. But if you actually get down to real science, you know, the way science is really done, it's really a very human subject. And really what it comes down to is, you know, when you're a kid, you want to know how things work.
Exactly.
You know, my two boys I mentioned at the beginning of the program, you know, when they were little, they'd always want to, they'd take something and they'd look at the bottom of it and try to break it apart and stuff, right? They're just a natural curiosity.
Yes.
And in some sense, some of the best scientists are people where that curiosity just never got beat out of them.
Okay.
You know, they're just still like that. They're still like little kids. They don't take anything for granted. They want to figure out how everything works.
Right.
And in that sense, in some ways, they're almost refreshingly human, right? Because they haven't got jaded. They haven't sort of got beat down by the fears of the world. And
absolutely.
In sort of the most pure sense, there's a lot of that.
Yeah.
And they certainly, you know, you find when you work on science that there's all the usual stuff, you know. There's politics.
Of course.
But there is this curiosity that hopefully is at the center of most people's drive to do it.
So when did this start for you, this curiosity thing? Because it's still going on, evidently.
Yeah.
Do you remember how far back your first time you were curious about something?
Well, I kind of had a very different... A lot of people go into physics. They start off with, you know, they wanted to build things. They had sort of erector sets or, you know, Legos or whatever the thing was back then. I actually started off interested most in math.
No kidding.
So I started with pure math. I just loved math from a very, very early age. And I actually, when I went to college, I wanted to be a mathematician all the way through, about halfway through college.
Now, we're talking about pursuing your bachelor's?
Yeah.
Okay.
That's right. Yeah. And I had a couple interesting experiences, but there, one is I ended up taking a physics class, which for me was sort of just for fun. I was just taking the physics. I was going to be a mathematician, the physics was on the
right.
side. First of all, I had an incredibly good physics professor who sort of really stimulated me. The other thing that happened is I talked to one of the really famous mathematicians, and I was just saying, I want to be a mathematician, what's it like and stuff. And he said, well, if you want to be a mathematician, you have to realize that most of your work is going to be done alone, and your papers are usually published with one author, and it's a very solitary subject. And this isn't true, you know, all across the board, but I think in general it is much more solitary than say physics.
Okay.
And I didn't like that. I like working with people.
Okay.
And not hundreds of people. I'm a huge party person, extrovert, but I like working with a couple people, you know. And that suited me better. And so that's why I went into physics.
That's something. Yeah. You know, that kind of segues into what I was going to talk about next, or have you talk about next anyway. And that is, you are involved in a program. And the reason that you are involved in this program is because of what you were just talking about, that you are in a science department, and you found that most of the people didn't even know other people's wife's name or their children, or if they had children, that kind of thing. And so you decided that you wanted to be involved in something that kind of opened that arena up, not only in the science department, but in the entire university. And I think, man, it's an excellent, excellent thing that you're doing. And that's when I got the understanding that you were you're a scientist, but you're also a people person as well. And I see that as a collaboration of the social sciences, that being people, and the you know, the science that you do. And so tell us a little bit about you can explain probably a little better how that came about and what are you guys seeking to do with this program.
Sure. Well, this program is called What Matters to Me and Why. And it came out of sort of some discussions I had with other faculty members, just sort of thing that, you know, although we have lots of talks on campus, of course, there's, you know, teaching talks, lectures, there's research talks, there's all sorts of talks. There's not that many places for people to really just delve a little deeper and say, you know, what does matter to them? What motivates them? What drives them? How do they get to be here at Irvine? We have people here from all over the world with all sorts of backgrounds.
Right.
And, you know, we don't actually hear too much about that. And there just didn't seem to be sort of a nice forum for that sort of discussion. And so we, John Stupar and I went to the chancellor and told him, you know, we felt there was a need for this on campus.
Okay.
And he was immediately receptive, which I was really happy about. We told him, you know, well, you know, we'd really like to have this once a month. We'd like to have free lunches. Mm. And we're estimating it probably, you know, we were very sheepish. I'm passing on this X dollars. And he said, done, sure, you got it.
No kid. And he said, it's hard coming by money in universities, man.
And he said to us, you probably wish you asked for more, didn't you? And I said, yep, that's true. I had no idea he would be so supportive.
Right, but, right.
So then, yeah, that was a while ago, maybe about almost 2 years ago now. Mm-hmm. And then we got it off the ground and mm-hmm. have invited various members of the UCI community
right.
to talk. And we've had absolutely fantastic speakers, uh-huh. including Nicole here and all sorts of people. And, you know, we just asked them to explain what matters to them and why. Mm-hmm. It takes all sorts of forms. You know, some mm-hmm. people talk about their childhoods. Mm-hmm. Some people talk about formative experiences when they were sort of just starting their careers. People talk about their families. People talk about health issues. People talk about their religious beliefs. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just all sorts of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the bottom line is there are stories.
Oh, right.
The stories are just stories of, you know, people. Just, mm-hmm. you know, I won't call them normal people. They're all, you know, everybody has a story.
Yes.
And they're just so interesting to me. And so, yeah, we have this these talks once a month here on campus.
Mm-hmm.
And we've found them to be really interesting, and they appealed not to faculty, to staff, to students, and sort of bring all those three components together. Sometimes mm-hmm. they don't mix too much,
mm-hmm.
But that's one mm-hmm. thing that they definitely do all sort of seem to appreciate these talks.
Okay. Yeah. A lot of times, just like neutrons and protons, you can't see them. You actually aren't able to see the transformation in people after having had that talk. But I bet you it's amazing the changes that take place just because of that experience, you know. And yeah. and I'd like to think that people become better people as a result of that, not only because they're talking to others and sharing their experiences, but they're reminding themselves of what they've been through, where they are now, and how blessed they are, and things of that nature. So it's
absolutely, yeah. You know, we give them a questionnaire to all
okay.
the people who
okay.
are there, and encourage them to fill it out before they leave.
Mm-hmm.
And so we get some feedback, and the feedback has, you know, unless someone's screening it for me, the feedback has been uniformly positive.
Okay.
And you know, most people are just really appreciative of the speakers. Mm-hmm. You know, the speakers, mm-hmm. they have to, first of all, spend a lot of time. Second of all, they have it's a tough job. It's a lot harder talk to give than most talks.
I'm sure.
And,
I'm sure.
They spend a lot of effort on it, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
And so these questionnaires appreciate that. And then we hear anecdotes, you know.
Okay.
One of my favorites was I heard that some fairly young person, I think maybe in his 20s, mm-hmm. was at the talk, and as a result of hearing the talk, called up his dad, who was mm-hmm. more or less sort of estranged from him. They hadn't talked too much about very personal things for a long time,
mm-hmm.
and opened up a new conversation again. He said, mm-hmm. you know, Dad, you know, things that you were telling me, I just heard them again from this speaker, and it kind of brought up
man.
New things and sort of opened that channel of communication.
With his father.
Yeah. And
oh,
so we
man.
Hear, you know, these are just anecdotes,
mm-hmm.
but
mm-hmm.
They do help us keep motivated.
Right.
Because,
right.
you know, I'm hoping that if I hear a few anecdotes, that means there's a lot more out there.
Absolutely.
You know, yeah.
Absolutely.
I'm hoping that they actually encourage people to dig deep and mm-hmm. you know, be a little introspective about where they are in life and where
exactly.
they're going and what's important.
Exactly. You know, too, I think a lot of times we, for lack of a better word, become addicted to our work.
Mm.
And we need an outlet from time to time,
mm-hmm.
and we need a reminder of who we really are. We're not this staunch professor that got to get this work done right now, you know.
Yeah.
And it kind of opens up that venue for us to reflect on who we are, and possibly might even change the way we teach or the way we look at things, you know. So mm-hmm. I mean, the potential for what you're doing is infinite. It's
that,
infinite.
That's really a good point.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think part of the motivation we've heard from graduate students, a lot of graduate students, for example, want to be professors.
Oh yeah, okay.
But you know, the academic environment is sort of set to encourage people to just put on their best face.
Oh, like, exactly.
You know, you try to give the impression that you were just born knowing all this stuff. You never grew, you never had disappointments, you never had, you know, setbacks.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, that's ridiculous. We all do, right? But the academic thing just encourages this facade of, you know, mm-hmm. I was very smart all along, and it was just comes automatically to me. Mm-hmm. And that's sort of discouraging to people who want to grow or are encountering tough things.
Exactly.
And it doesn't have to be in an academic career path. Mm-hmm. It could just be with your identity. You know, that's where it plays in with diversity and inclusion and things like that. You know, sometimes things are very lonely. And it helps to know that there are other people who went before you. And they weren't just, you know, created. Boom, there they were.
Right.
They were perfect, you know.
Right.
They had struggles.
Mm-hmm.
And so, we hope that that also encourages people.
Yeah, I'm sure it does. And it's amazing that point you're making, because I remember when I was a co-pastor at a church, and when I, you know, we alternated when we gave the talk, and a lot of times I would give the talk, and I would talk about things that were not, we'll say, good things, and things that showed my defects of character and shortcomings and that kind of thing.
Right.
And the co-pastor would say to me, Calvin, you know, we can't give them the impression that you're not, you know, worthy of being a minister and you know, and counseling them and that kind of thing. So you want to kind of keep that short, you know. but the parishioners were like, Calvin, I'm glad you shared that with me, because it makes me know that you're human, you know, because I always thought, like I thought about you, you know what I mean? and so people, you know, that point you were making in terms of people being able to really express themselves and really free themselves is such a good thing. And then when others see it, like you were talking about the grad students, they say, oh, yeah, I could be a professor, because I don't have to prove that I'm a professor.
Right.
You know, I just need to be myself and talk about what I know, you know. So,
exactly.
Yeah, that's great.
You know, I completely agree with that. You got to be human before you can start giving advice to people.
I mean, robots are useful, but I don't think people really want to be friends with them, you know.
Right.
Yeah, that's amazing, man. And again, like before, man, I wish you guys much, much success, because that's something that's needed throughout the world. Not just, I mean, this is like a microcosm of the world, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And for that to take place here, we don't know how far that might spread. And I'm looking to see other schools picking that up, because I think it's so very important. I was sharing with one of the students here, because he was saying how boring it is on campus.
Mm.
He said there's nothing to do, you know? And I think that's an aspect of campus life that's critical, you know, knowing that other people go to school here, other people teach here, you know, because I'm sure there's a fear involved in going to class and excelling, pretty much, you know, because things in the world are so competitive that we feel that we have to be on top, you know, in order to be successful, and we don't have to be.
Yeah.
We don't have to be. We can share things and be successful as a group of people rather than an individual.
Yeah.
You know, because that Nobel Prize we talked about, you shared that with a lot of people. It wasn't just, you know, one person. That was with a lot of people. And I think that's so very important.
Absolutely.
To think that we are an integral part of something bigger than ourselves is so crucial. Speaking of big, we talked last time about the fact that I don't know. I know it was either 5 or 6% of all the knowledge that we have, everybody collectively. We all get together in a huge place and dispel and talk about all the knowledge that we have about everything that exists in the universe. We would only cover like 5 or 6% of the universe.
Right.
Tell me a little bit about that.
Yeah, well, this is greatly humbling. So all this great stuff we were talking about before, protons and neutrons and electrons, quarks even.
Yeah, right.
We really understand this stuff well. Mm-hmm. And so you could easily think, wow, we've pretty much, you know, we've done it.
We've covered everything.
And we now believe that that whole body of knowledge explains beautifully, but just explains 5% of the universe.
5%.
Yeah, it's 5%.
My goodness.
And the other parts that we don't understand are provisionally called dark matter, mm-hmm. dark energy.
Mm-hmm.
And these are names, they're sort of names given because some portion of this other stuff we pretty much know it's matter, that is, it's particles, but it isn't any of the particles we know about.
Mm.
And so we call it dark matter. We haven't seen it, and so it's kind of dark. you know, we know a little bit more than that, but that pretty much gets across the gist of it, that we're really ignorant about this. And then even more so, there's this thing called dark energy, which is out there. And, this is a big part of my research right now.
Okay.
To try to figure out what this stuff is.
Mm-hmm.
The reason we know it exists is there's pretty good evidence that it exists. So, for example, dark matter, we can see, you know, like if most people think of a galaxy, they kind of think of this sort of pancake of stars with these spiral arms, and they rotate around the center.
Mm-hmm.
And we can observe those and measure things about them. And we know that the stars are going around too fast to be held in their orbits if the only thing holding them there was the stuff in the middle.
Okay.
So it's kind of like, what's an example? Like if you're on a merry-go-round, and you're going around and around, the faster you go, the harder you have to hold on, right? Because there's a greater and greater force sort of pulling you out.
Mm-hmm.
And these stars are going around so fast that they must have had a very large force pulling them into the middle to keep them going around in circles.
Mm-hmm.
And we can measure all the stuff in the middle. We can figure out how much mass and stars there was in the middle, sort of keeping them there. Mm-hmm. And there's not enough.
Mm.
In fact, it's not enough by a large margin.
To keep all those stars in doing what they're doing.
Exactly.
Okay.
And so there must be some other stuff in the middle there that's pulling on this stuff gravitationally, but we just can't see it. It's dark. And so this is one way we know that there's dark matter.
Mm-hmm.
And there are many, many other ways we can tell it's there. Some fascinating techniques, but they all point to the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, we got to go out and find it.
Right.
And so, you know, so we're doing all sorts of work to try to find this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a fascinating field of research right now.
Gotta be.
It's one of these things where it's a little bit like, to give an analogy, if you were back in, I don't know, 1400s, 1500s or something, you know, you know that the Earth is pretty big.
Mm-hmm.
Like if you're in Europe, right? And you know the Earth is pretty big, but you really have no idea what's out there. And so you send these ships out, you know, in various places, and some of them get shipwrecked and never come back. And you go, well, I guess that wasn't a good move. But, you know, some of them might go out and actually discover a new continent or something.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's actually what we're doing right now.
Okay.
We know that the universe has got 5 times as much dark matter as matter. So there's got to be something out there. But we don't know what it is. And so we're sending out ships in the form of various experiments looking for this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that's basically, if I had to say in one sentence, what is my scientific goal, is to answer that question. What is dark matter?
Okay.
So I'm hoping we make some progress on this.
Yeah, I'm sure. I'm sure you will. Tell me this, because from my understanding, I'm sure a lot of people feel the same way. There's a thing that we all have heard of called black holes.
Mm-hmm.
What are black holes?
Black holes are sort of concentrations of matter that are so concentrated that light can't even get out of it. Okay, so like if you have the Earth, you know that if you take a baseball and you throw it in the air, it's going to come back.
It's coming back.
Right, it's going to come back. You throw it harder, it'll go farther, but it'll still come back.
Mm-hmm.
But there's some point at which you throw it so hard with such a huge velocity, it will actually go off into outer space, and it will not come back. Okay, so that's a fact. But if the Earth were bigger or denser, then you'd have to throw it that much harder to get to not come back.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a certain mass where if the Earth were that massive, not only would you couldn't get your baseball to leave. It'd always come back.
Mm-hmm.
Even light won't leave. So you shine a laser out there, and the light can't get out
A certain area.
Yeah. A certain area, exactly. And so that's what a black hole is.
My goodness.
It traps everything in it. And you can fall in. It's like Hotel California. You can check in, but you can't check out. You go in a black hole, but you'll never come back out.
That's amazing, man. Yeah. That's amazing.
And they were thought to be just, you know, figments of imagination or something that came out of these weird Einstein. Actually, it came from Einstein's general relativity, these predictions.
No kidding?
Yeah, and so you know, in the course I teach, we talk about black holes a lot.
Okay.
But we now know that these actually exist. In fact, the sort of best guess we have is that there's a huge giant one at the center of every galaxy that we've ever observed.
How many, you say the center of every galaxy, how many galaxies are we talking about?
You know, billions and
trillions. Oh, come
trillions.
On, man. Yeah. Billions of galaxies?
Yeah. And so...
I mean, like the Earth and the others, I think there's only 8 planets now, right?
Yeah,
I mean, it's bigger than... I mean, that ain't even a galaxy. That is more than that to a galaxy.
Yeah.
And you're talking about billions of them. And something else I think was very interesting that you talked about the last time. You said that just as we're growing, the universe is expanding. So we're talking about... It was a billion, billions the other day, and it might be trillions now.
Well, actually, the way we understand it now, that number is probably pretty much set. It's just that they're getting farther and farther.
I got you.
So
I got
they're
you.
Kind of, they're getting more and more dilute.
Okay.
Yeah, there's still a lot of them. And we're almost positive that we have one at the center of our galaxy, at the Milky Way.
Another galaxy?
No, a big
black hole. Oh, yeah, I'm sure. I'm sure. Man, this is amazing. As I told you before we even came in this room, I am so excited about you being here, man. Because it's so amazing to me. I love science fiction. I love science fiction. And a lot of times when I'm watching science fiction, I kind of question, is this science fiction or is this real? You know, and then from what you've said about, you know, relativity and those kinds of things, a lot of stuff is real, but it's just that it hasn't been put out as such, you know. And something that I think is so very important is what you're doing, because the purpose of what you're doing, even though you haven't said it, but I know it, you know, is to inform the people what's going on. You know, what's happening in the galaxies. You know, and I think that's so very important, because the something that I'd like to discuss with you, and that is, If we are only, everything we know is only 5% of what exists, then you talked about being humbling. It's very humbling, and I want to know, so of what use are we? What kind of influence are we having on all of this? And as I said, you're going to inform us of what's out there, but what are we going to do about it? Or what can we do? Or what should we do? Where are we headed as a species, so to speak, you know?
Well, that's interesting. That's probably... There's probably better people to talk about that than me. I mean, it is humbling.
The
idea... You know, we go way back and we thought we were at the center of
everything.
And the sun went around us and things. And right. We don't really think that way. But yeah, I don't know. I don't know. So I think the bottom line is I'd feel pretty unqualified to answer that. Mm-hmm. But, you know, there's a lot of other things that are going on now that are pretty remarkable, too.
You
talk about science fiction. You know, there are searches now for other Earths. Circling other
meaning
stars.
Inhabited planets, you know, or so.
Possibly inhabited. And this, you know, is really science fiction. The idea that there's, like, you know, little green monsters.
Right.
Out there. But this is real science now. People are looking for what are called exoplanets. And these are planets that are circling another star, not the sun, but something like the sun. And are going around just the right distance so that their temperatures are about the same as the temperature of Earth. And they might, you know, support life also. And so, you know, this, you know, if you ever found that would really get into some pretty philosophical territory about, you know, what is our purpose?
Right.
How unique are we?
Exactly.
Things like
that. Yeah. I would venture to say that as vast as these things are, it would be, I mean, it's almost impossible not to believe that something besides us on this planet exists in this vast universe or whatever you want to call it. And so, and with all the talk of people having experienced other beings, you know, and for us to think that that's an impossibility today in 2014, it's a lot more possible in people's minds, at least, than it was in 1920. You know, I mean, that was a bunch of crock to think you saw something. But today it's like, he might have. You know? and from what you're saying, and that gives me an idea of at least a little bit of our purpose here. And that is that if we're here, as far as I'm concerned, to help others, that other is infinite as well. You know, not just on this planet, but all over the place. And the things that scientists are doing today, exploring new places, like in Star Trek, you know, places where no man has ever gone, that kind of thing. It's just becoming more and more believable that we are not it. We are not it, but we are significant because of the fact that I don't believe we'd be here if we had no significance. You know what I mean? And the things that you're doing and other like others like you are doing, trying to bring people to a commonality, is so important because we need to figure out what we're going to do. Because most of those science fiction movies, when you see aliens coming, you shoot them. And that ain't cool. You know what I mean? And so we want to, you know, we want to at least get out, look here, look, people, they're here. They might be coming. So we need to be aware of it and need to treat them as we would treat ourselves, you know, before we start shooting and that kind of thing. This is an amazing, amazing show, man. I'm loving this show. I wish we had more time, but I'm gonna talk to you after the show because I need to look into some of them classes. something else that I want to talk about. We talk about other planets. What about other dimensions on this planet? Do you have any insight or any thought on that? Other dimensions.
So, like, you know, we think of three dimensions.
Yeah.
X, Y, and Z sort of coordinates. Are there other ones? I do have thoughts on that. This is actually another field of, you know, it's another thing which kind of was science fiction.
Right.
of actual, you know, serious scientific inquiry now.
Yes.
And there are various ideas that are sort of motivating people to think that there might be more dimensions. These dimensions have to be really small, otherwise we would kind of see them.
Okay.
Right?
Okay.
Otherwise, you know, I could actually, like, you know, wave my hands and point in the X direction, the Y direction, the Z direction, and then the W direction, right? And that would be pretty obvious. We can't do that.
Okay.
So there's got to be some limitations. But there are actually possibilities that there are other dimensions which are not too small. I mean, they're small, but they're not like atomic size. They're much bigger than atoms.
Okay.
And people are looking for them, actually. There are various ways you could see evidence for that sort of thing.
Okay.
One possibility is that you could take two objects. So we know that there's something called the Newtonian force law, which tells you...
That's the Newton guy?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, so he said basically that two objects, you know, two massive objects, they pull on each other with a force that goes as 1 over r squared, the distance between them.
Okay.
So basically that's just saying if they're twice as far apart, the force is 4 times weaker.
Okay.
If they're 3 times as far apart, there's 9 times weaker. So there's a scaling rule there. And that's been verified... to, you know, in every experiment we've ever done. But the amazing fact is that if you put your fingers roughly the sort of width of a piece of paper apart, we don't actually know if the tips of your fingers are actually interacting in accord with that force law. And if they aren't, that could be evidence of a new dimension at that scale. Turns out this 1 over r squared law is very intimately tied up to the fact that there's three spatial dimensions.
Okay.
And
okay.
So people are trying to do experiments where they're taking different masses and sticking them pretty close together, maybe a little bit less than a millimeter, and seeing are they actually pulling on each other with this Newtonian force law. And if they aren't, then that might be a signal that there's actually extra dimensions. So it's a active field of study. There's all sorts of other ways to look for them.
I'm sure. Yeah. That's amazing. Yeah. Truly amazing. Man. We got a little bit of time left, about 3 or 4 minutes.
Okay.
So take your time, because if we go over a little bit, that's okay. dimensions... other beings, just all of this stuff, just bringing all of this stuff together into two different realms and kind of realizing that there is some type of relativity between these two realms, and that's the spiritual and the scientific. And I would like to know how you feel about the relationship between the spiritual and the scientific, because let me just give you an example. This is really crude, but this is how I think, so you have an idea how I think. The Earth was created in 7 days. Scientists say we've been here 6 billion years. The Bible says that my day could be 1,000 years. You know what I mean? And so, to me, it's the same. You know what I mean? Okay. It's all relative. How long is your day? And it could be 1 billion years. So tell me, that's just really simple how I look at things, and tell me how you feel about that same, that analogy.
Well, this is something I think about a lot.
Okay.
Because, I'm a Christian.
You're right.
These sort of issues come up both in faith, things like the beginning of the universe, the creation story, and then in science, right? The Big Bang.
Right.
I think, for me, it's important to read the Bible in the way it was intended. It wasn't, written as a scientific textbook, right?
Exactly.
It has a lot more to do with God's relationship to us, our relationship to each other. And it talks a lot more about all sorts of things, like, it talks more about money than it talks about the origin of the universe, right?
Right.
And so clearly we have to see that in that context, right? And, of course, different parts of the Bible, I think, are written as different kinds of ways.
Okay.
Some are more historical, some are more poetry, and things like that. But it's a very fine line to draw. I mean, I don't want to say that everything can be interpreted the way you think of it. I think it's important that for people of faith that, the scriptures, whatever faith actually, are in some sense a guide, and they just can't be thrown around and conformed to whatever you feel like, otherwise they're not going to, help you with your life. They're not going to change you, right? They should have some life-changing ability, and you have to give them sort of important place in your life so that they can do that.
Right.
At the same time, we interpret things as best we can based on our thoughts. And when we have discovered new things in science, we shouldn't ignore that. We don't turn off our brains and say that we just simply don't believe certain scientific progress because it doesn't conform with our view. It's a very important question. I think a lot of people have sort of seen it as a, religion versus science thing.
Yes, yes.
And to me, as someone who sort of has a foot in both worlds, there's no need for this sort of antagonism. a lot of the things that are said in one community sound crazy in the other and vice versa.
Yes.
And it's sort of maybe, put it back in the context of some of the stuff we were talking about. A lot of it is just simply that we're not exposed enough to other communities.
Okay.
So, going back to what matters to me and why, I could spend my whole life sitting in the physics building and not have any idea what's going on in the humanities or the arts or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And it's important that we try to get out there and, you know, see the world a little bit from that perspective.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the same thing from, you know, the faith and the science point of view. A lot of the misunderstanding comes from the fact that some, you know, skeptics or atheists have never really tried to engage with the faith community.
Exactly.
And vice versa.
Exactly.
So a lot of scientists, Christians or mm-hmm. other faith people in the faith communities haven't tried to come to a university and
right.
see what's going on there
right.
and, you know, see what the research is.
Yeah.
So, yeah, everything is helped by people listening to different points of views.
Exactly.
Really taking it seriously and absorbing it. You know?
Yeah. Yeah, and that's exactly why you're on this show. And that's why I want to, man, thank you so much for being here. Thank you so much. And we're definitely going to have you on again. And you guys, the name is Jonathan is the first name, and the last name is Feng. If you see anything that this man has put together or written about, be sure to check it out, because you're going to be in for a treat. You're definitely going to be in for a treat. And you know that already because you've heard him.
Well, thank you so much, Kelly.
Oh, man.
Opportunity.
Oh, thank you. Thank you.
Pleasure.
Yeah. And so I want you guys to stay tuned for Galactic Soup with Israel Medina, and he's going to be starting at 6. And I thank all of you guys for listening, and I thank the professor for being here. And I just want you to know that this man is not going to get paid by us, so it's a real treat. Thank you guys for listening.